Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Today, it's what we do. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. I'm Jim Blasingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show, and I'm glad you're here. Richard Beauvais is here, too, ladies and gentlemen. Richard is a new friend. He says we can call him Dick, and Dick is the author of a new book called The Guardians of Prosperity. Dick is a longtime journeyman on Wall Street. He is an internationally recognized expert analyst and defender of the banking industry, and he's here to talk to us about that very thing. The subtitle of his book is Why America Needs Big Banks. Dick Beauvais, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you here. Congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
And folks, many of you, yes, it's that Dick Beauvais. If you watch television, especially CNBC, you've seen Dick on that show many times. They like him up there. Hey, Dick, one of the things that people, the average person walking around the street who's paying any attention at all over the last 5 years, when they think of a big bank, all the different ones, the ones that failed and the ones that were acquired and the ones that remain, they remember the term too big to fail. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think that you have to think about the world that we live in, all right? The international money supply, you know, in convertible currencies is $56 trillion in size. And if, you know, the population figures put out by the IMF are correct, you know, by 2050 it'll be $81 trillion in size. In that huge money market, there are countries that are attempting to grow their banks very rapidly. For example, if I were to ask you, among the nine biggest banks in North America, how many are headquartered in the United States? You might be surprised to note that five are actually headquartered in Canada, mm-hmm. and four in the United States. If you look at the Industrial and Commercial Bank of China, basically that bank should earn about $43 billion this year, which is more money than J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo, our two biggest banks, mm-hmm. put together. In fact, the smallest of the big four banks in China is bigger than the biggest banks in the United States. So if we're going to compete in a global financial market, we definitely need big banks.
So you're making the case that the big banks are basically part of our national defense in a way.
Well, you know, if you
I don't mean militarily, but our future defense, economic defense.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. In other words, basically, if you go back centuries, and I don't care what country you want to take a look at, there's pretty much always been a symbiotic relationship between big banks and the governments. Sometimes the governments have to help the banks, and other times the banks have to help the governments. But they work together to advance, if you will, the economic cause of that nation, and to shrink them when everybody else is trying to expand theirs, I think is a big mistake.
Well, you bring up a point there to me that screams of a couple of things. Our good friend Bob McTeer, and I'm sure someone you know, has been a member of my Brain Trust now for about 15 years. He's taught us about the concept of the moral hazard with regard to be too big to fail. And also, when you use the example of banks helping the government, governments helping the bank, the other word that screams at me is oligarchy. Talk about those two things, please.
Well, I think that you're right, that there's an oligopoly in the banking industry in every major country in the world. And if you were to take a look at the United States, it actually is less concentrated in banking than other countries because there is close to 7,000 banks in the United States and there isn't in other countries. In Europe at the present time, you see the banks helping the government as opposed to the government helping the banks because the banks are raising deposits and then they're taking that money and they're reinvesting it in government securities, mm-hmm. to assist these governments, you know, through their period of difficulty. Even in the United States, you know, where the, whether you want to call it the bailout or the investment made by the government in the banks, on the TARP investment, you know, the government earned somewhere between $15 and $20 billion in profit, all of which went to the taxpayer. And if you take a look at the Federal Reserve, basically their profits have increased by $40 billion a year. So over a five-year period, that's $200 billion in increased profits that went to the, you know, to the taxpayer.
But, Dick, if you come back, we come back now to that other term, moral hazard. If when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, when investors basically believed that they would be bailed out by the government, if something happened to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, that creates a moral hazard, and when people have, you know, too big to fail, after the fact something happens, nobody could have foresee it. That's one thing, but for people to take risks beyond which they can fund the downside. And they and the government is going to, everybody believes the government is going to come in and bail them out. That's a serious moral hazard and not a good way to do business. What do you think?
Yeah, you're exactly right. There's no question about it. And I think that, you know, there was a study done. Congress set up a committee called the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission once the collapse had occurred. And the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, you know, interviewed hundreds of people over an 18-month period and came out with a report which suggested, explicitly stated that if the government's regulators at the Federal Reserve, at the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, at the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, at the state agencies, if they had done their jobs, then the excesses which had built up in the banking industry could have been controlled. Now, you know, basically speaking, you're right. There is a moral hazard. There's no right for any company to assume that the government is going to bail them out of their mistakes. But the thought that bankers don't get hurt by what they do is, I think, a mistake.
Well, tell that to Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers, right? I've only got about 30 seconds, Dick. How do we have strong big banks without the moral hazard?
Well, I think, you know, the way we do it is we have the regulators do their jobs. In other words, if a bank is getting involved in the underwriting of questionable securities, I think the fact is that they should be shut down.
Right.
If they do things, you know, with depositors' money, which are high risk in nature, they should be stopped.
Well, isn't that what the Volcker Rule is intended to do?
The Volcker Rule has, you know, one small aspect of it. The bigger aspect of it are the normal audits being given by the government agencies.
Right.
That's where the stop should start.
Hold on to that thought. But Dick Beauvais, ladies and gentlemen, Richard X. Beauvais, B-O-V-E, is the author of Guardians of Prosperity, a book I highly recommend to you if you want to know what really happened during the 2008.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.